Our world today thrives on our ability to learn and build solutions. As easy as it is to tell someone to learn, the act of learning is one of the most laborious activities and in most cases, the least fun thing anyone has to do. Traditional learning methods over the years have had their advantages but still don't cover a wide range of different learning methods each student is accustomed to. In this episode, we sit with Samit Khalsa and Kamya Koseni, founders of Pensium, an edtech company leveraging AI to bring more life to studies and making students less anxious about the subject they are afraid of. Enjoy today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Big Spark. Big Spark is the UK's fastest growing data solutions consultancy, translating your business needs into data architecture, strategy, and engineering. Together with their technical partners, they focus on swift and efficient business value delivery. Taking an innovative approach to every challenge, Big Spark is an agile team of over 100 world-class engineers and data scientists pushing the boundaries of what can be achieved with AI, data, software, cloud, and machine learning. To find out how Big Spark can ignite your data solution, visit us at www.bigspark.dev. Big Spark, igniting change through engineering. Okay, so hello everyone and welcome to the TechSurf podcast where we navigate today's tech wave, one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host, Raymond Cluche, and today I have two brilliant minds in the AI space who are coming to walk us through their journey. And as you all know, I don't like to introduce my guests. I like to give them a magic wand to give us all the magic that is in them. So first and foremost, I'd like to say Cam and Samit, thank you so much for acknowledging to join the TechSurf podcast today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Raymond.
Perfect. Okay, so I would want each of you to briefly introduce yourselves. Cam, you can start and then Samit, you can end. Yeah.
Sure thing. I'm Cam Husseini. I think this word of entrepreneur, right? It's been overplayed, overused. So I'm gonna go by enthusiast is overused as well. So let me look for a word. Person that is very much very interested about technology and artificial intelligence per se. So I'm Cam Husseini once again. I started my tech journey when I was 9. My brother kind of got me into kind of developing. Never got good at it, just enough to get by. And went to university, did my computer engineering degree, got out, started a software development company, ironically. And 3 years, I guess 2 years later, started a company, sold it. And then July of this year, started an AI tech company or ed tech company. And I guess that's as brief as I could do it.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's funny because me and Cam, all our ventures have been together. So whatever he's talked about, I'm going to probably repeat the same things. again, hello, everyone. I'm Samit Khalsa. You could say I'm a tech enthusiast as well. But I didn't start as early as Cam. I probably started in university. I'm a computer engineer as well. And that's actually where I met Cam, my co-founder in pretty much all our businesses. Started a tech service company right out of university. And again, sold the company as well and started the EdTech AI company with Cam. So that's my introduction, which kind of overlaps too. But yeah, here we are.
That is perfect. I think I should be starstruck because all of you are talking about what you were doing when you were 9, younger. Tech for me, it was nothing. I got into tech. Even I actually go into the deepest part of tech after university. So even during my degree, it wasn't so fun. But it's nice to know that a desire, you found that desire and you've gotten to where you are. And fun fact, those who are listening, they're also co-hosts and podcasters. So I feel very much at home. I know there's going to be a very electrifying conversation. So before we get into anything, I'm just curious, you're not brothers. You don't look alike. One is wearing glasses. The other doesn't wear glasses. You have different colors of hair. How did you meet? Who wants to go first?
Very, very interesting question. I would, before I answer that question, I'll let Summit answer it. But before going there, Summit and I are essentially, again, another cliche, just one soul in two different bodies, because Ooh. We think alike.
Okay.
We do things alike.
Right.
We are just in two separate locations. Yeah. You know, and it's as weird as that sounds, it's just the entire university time, mm-hmm. our experiences have been, if not exactly similar, exactly the same,
mm-hmm.
it's been highly similar. So I'm mm-hmm. gonna let Summit say the, how we met and how it came about.
Right. It's an interesting story. I think when I first came across Cam, well, we met in university. We were in the same program, but the first time I saw him, it wasn't a very positive experience. I'm like, who is this guy? Who is this guy walking in with like gold headphones and his gym bag? He's walking into class trying to make people look like he's so much better than them. Right. I'm like, okay, this guy's rubbing me off the wrong way. Who is he? Right. But eventually our friend groups kind of mixed and we got to talking, you know, talking about like where we come from, our mm-hmm. backgrounds. And it was funny because, you know, every superhero has like their origin story, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we both went through like our origin story. I'm like, oh my God, like this guy has the exact same, but very similar experiences mm-hmm. to what I've had. And we're like, we're almost in the same boat.
Right.
And funny enough, throughout university, you know, I feel like there are different levels of life that you hit.
Mm.
And for some reason, me and Cam hit those levels of life at the exact same time.
Mm.
So just knowing that there was someone who understood what I was talking about at every stage just made it so much easier for us to talk. And of course, after university, even start a business.
Mm. Impressive. So what is your fun or what is your best memory of each other in school outside of working in the lab and writing some long COBOL or I don't know, maybe Python? You tell me.
I guess for me was so Summit was into photography. So
okay.
He was the entire university. He was into photography, got me into photography. I started, you know, taking pictures and all that. But we were his kind of lab rats around like his test objects and subjects, I guess, right? And the best memories are when we got together and we would like shoot for no reason, just like random photos, random shots. And I still have the Polaroids, right?
Oh, okay.
He took a picture back in 2017, took a picture of me, and then on the back of it, he tried to write, I'm Persian, so okay. he tried to write Farsi. It's like my brother in Farsi. Right. And okay. that is, to me, is the greatest memory I have of him. It's just like something that I look at like pretty often.
Oh.
And I look at it as like, yeah, someone is, you know, as close as him.
Right.
That is just trying to do that. And that kind of stuck with me since.
Oh, wow. We like some good bromance, and this is really beautiful. How about you, Sammy? What's your fave memory of Cam?
That's a good memory, Cam. I even forgot about that, to be honest. But I would say my fondest memory would essentially be the first trip that we took together.
Right.
So we went to Iceland on this interesting trip. We were like, okay, we just want to go adventure, forget about everything else. So it was me, Cam, and another friend of ours. And we were like, okay, how do we maximize our experience and spend as little money as we can, right? So what we did was we packed our own like ramen noodles and like Nutri bars from university. And we traveled to Iceland, right?
Okay.
We were like, we just want to experience adventure.
Okay.
I think the most memorable piece of that was, and this kind of plays into, I guess, our entrepreneurship mind, you could say, is that we're very, I don't know, we like to try new things, but we're also sort of impulsive, right? And the thing is, we bounce ideas off of each other, and each idea just gets more stupider and more like riskier.
Right.
So when we were there, we were like, okay, why don't we climb something, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next idea is, why don't we climb a waterfall? The next idea was, why don't we climb something even taller, right? Mm-hmm. And then somehow we landed up scaling a waterfall that with no equipment. It was the most stupidest idea, but it was something of an experience because, like I said, we did it with no equipment. And I'm pretty sure all of us at some point of climbing that experience, like a near that experience, right?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, it was, so it was middle of winter, right? So you can imagine what the situation was in Iceland. And the three of us take different paths to come down because it was so scary. We just like make the wrong move and you're dead. So I tried to, you know, like come down this ice patch. I come down, my legs are shaking, the adrenaline is rushing, right? I sit down. Don't try this at home. I sat down, start my light up a cigarette, smoke, and I'm like, we live another day. It was that scary.
Right.
And it got to a point where we had international, you know, like obviously like roaming, but we wouldn't try to use it because, again, it cost us. We were university students at the time. And we get to the bottom. We can't find our other friend. We were like, oh, my God, where is he? Right? Oh, did he die? He went through his own thing.
Right.
So Summit calls him. He's like, he's on the other side of the mountain. We're calling him. He's crawling down. And you had to crawl down, like legit, like had to crawl down the mountain and you would like fall and just grab onto a patch of grass or something. And I tore my pants and everything. It's just like, if we had gone through that, there's nothing else that could kill me. Obviously, that's not true. But I mean, that was a very interesting experience.
Fair. It's so funny you mentioning mountains because I was doing a bit of a throwback recently on my social media and I was sitting at the edge of a cliff with my German friend. And I'm Ghanaian, come from Africa. I traveled a lot when I was a kid, so my parents exposed me to other cultures. But on a normal day, the African parents does not want to see their child sit on the cliff, let alone one who does not know how to swim. And I was at the edge with my legs all hanged up. I was so comfortable. But I look at the picture and I realized that I took some very crazy risks. And they probably, you know, have added to who I am today and the way I think. Speaking about risks, you both have had to start businesses. And I always see starting a business to be a huge risk. I think the closest thing I've started to a business is this podcast. And I treat it as a business because I'm working with a little team. I have a plan and all that kind of stuff. But the idea of having sleepless nights, which I was not planning on having, but now it's part of my life, and all that, people glamorize entrepreneurship. People make entrepreneurship sound like this. You're making this amount of turnover a year. You're in the news, in Forbes. You're doing other kind of stuff. You're in the conferences. But then you speak to entrepreneurs and they tell you, it takes a lot to get the business where it is now. I want you, each of you, I don't know whether you, maybe if you can, you know, intersect it to when you guys started working on the same thing together. Each of you, maybe Sammy, you start your first business and roll it on, like roll it over to maybe where you and Sam, or you and Cam met, and then maybe Cam, you could do similar, and then we take it from there.
Yeah, sure. I think there's an incredible amount of risk when it comes to starting your own business, right? And for us, that risk was, well, we're fresh graduates, right? And we have no money. How do we make money, right? So to give you some more context, me and Cam, we graduated university at the peak of COVID, so 2020, right? And at that point, you know, you had a lot of people losing their jobs, their job offers getting rescinded and things like that. And me and Cam were sitting there being like, okay, what do we do now, right? There's obviously something that's pushing us back, you know, well, COVID. But there's also, there can be an opportunity out of it, right? And that opportunity is what we saw is that because of people not being able to meet in person or anything of that sort, everything needs to go online, right? And that's actually what we thought and that's what we did. We started making websites. That's how we started. I would design, Cam would code, and we had another partner as well that would help us. And we brought a bunch of students or recent graduates to just work on this, right? From there, it slowly started to pick up, grew. And, you know, we started building apps, and then we got bigger contracts, and we're like, okay, wow, we can make an actual business out of this. So we are fortunate enough to see that opportunity and actually do it. But in terms of risk, I don't think me and Cam have, well, I haven't worked like corporate before. So for me to take a leap of faith wasn't as big as I would say somebody, you know, who does work corporate and wants to make that jump. But how I look at it, and of course, entrepreneurship isn't for everyone, but how I look at it is I'm at a point in my life where I don't have too many responsibilities, right? And as you get older, those responsibilities do get bigger, right? So for me, the risk is what I can do it now or I can do it later. But if I do it now, I have less responsibilities, so it makes more sense for me now. And that's why I did it. And I think timing is a big thing as well. But I'll let Cam speak. I think I've talked about my perspective. Yeah.
I think hindsight is an amazing thing, right? When you look at it and when you see it, what worked, you think you were very smart at a time and you know, you kind of predicted everything. But the reality from my side is that I did not know what would work. And I don't know what's going to work right now. And it is something that I kind of try to instill in myself very early on in my university career, that I cannot control the outcomes of many things, many people, many professors marking my grade, marking my paper. He's not feeling well, or she's not feeling well. I get a lower grade than I'm supposed to, right? I can't control the outcome of things that I don't have any control over. Again, plain and simple. And business, you times that by a million, right? Everything can, like COVID happened, everything went online. Yeah, we thought everything would go online and there would be a great opportunity for us, but it was a guess, right? It wasn't like I had this like amazing Warren Buffett sort of knowledge about the market. I didn't. I just guessed and it worked. I was lucky, right? But I don't know what I was watching. I think it was one of the Y Combinator videos. And one of these mentors said, well, you have to create luck for yourself. If you're lucky, you can get lucky again. How do you create luck for yourself? And it's like, do more. Just put yourself out there as many times as possible. Some people, it will strike the first time. Some people, it will take 10, 15, 20 times. What happened in our business? We were really lucky. We started, you know, when they say in the first 3 years, 90% of the businesses don't succeed. That is true. You know how many ideas we had, how many things we've started? If you go on our LinkedIn, some of these pages we've closed, we had this and that and this project, that project, this business, that business. The amount of businesses we actually developed for, I mean, the startups that kind of hired us. So what it is that I was telling a friend of mine is that ideas don't matter. Essentially, projects don't matter. Companies don't matter. It's the friendships that you make along the way. It is what you learn out of all of this and the emotional resilience. It's like, don't get tied down because you've lost an idea or a project or something went down. Obviously, you can make that happen again. It is difficult to do it twice in a row, right? It may take you a long time, but if you have the right mindset and the emotional resilience, it will come to you sooner or later. And that is what I try to kind of live off of. The fact that as much as I try, things would, you know, turn against me or for me. That's like the project that we have right now. Maybe if I did it a couple months earlier, it would have turned different. Or a couple months later, it would have turned different, right? But we did it at the time that we did. We got the traction that we got. I'm very grateful for it. But do I think I did something significant that was so different? No, I am no Einstein. I am no, you know, like super genius person. I'm not. I am just who I am, and I will try to make the most out of who I am.
I like that. I like that. I actually like that, the fact that you said, just keep doing it and keep putting yourself out there. I had an episode with one of my friends, and she was like, one thing her mentors told her was that she has to build in public. And building in public can be very scary because people will see you writing, maybe trying to put a data type in front of your Python variable or variable, depending on who's listening. I have Americans or Canadians, sorry, on the pod, and I am British colonized, Ghanaian colonized by the British. So we'll find the right pronunciation. But talking about building in public, you know, sometimes it just allows you to, you know, publicize your folly, for the lack of a better word. But that is the only way you have people say, you know what, it's not done that way. Do it that way. Do it this way. And the more people keep, you know, correcting you and sharing your stuff, it's going to, you know, open you to more opportunities. And I actually love the fact that you talked about relationships, because when I look at my life and even my tech journey, a huge part of it has had to be accredited to people who just held my hand along the way. Because my parents even wonder, why am I still even doing tech? The fact that I even went further to even go and do a certification at AWS. I'm not really very techie like that. Unless the work demands it, then I'll do it. But the fact that I just keep going forward is because I have people around me who, you know, identify, you know, other skills. Even the pod, it was a friend of mine who said, Raymond, you're a good communicator. You have some tech background. Just give it a shot. And here we are. So community is very important. Now, I know entrepreneurs are all out there to try and solve problems. And you said something about ideas. There's a plethora of ideas in the world. And you may think that, there's a joke in my country that before you have thought about an idea, China has already built it. So we know that Asia is already a million years ahead of us. So ideas are never, you know, new. However, people who are listening to this pod may be struggling with ideas, and that fear of, or that analysis paralysis phase of, is this going to work? How is it not going to work? Do I go into trying to get an angel investment right away or not? What do I do whatsoever? If you can walk us through some of those trying times you had in your early idea phases, like this idea came about. Okay, you both agree to disagree. Okay, then what's the next thing to do? Yeah, I don't know. I think since Cam, you ended, you just take it from there, and then Simon will continue.
For sure. It is true that the ideas are, you know, dime a dozen. Mm. And a lot of ideas are out there. Mm. You mentioned China's already thought about it. They're, you know, any idea that you, Mark Cuban said it once, is like everything that you thought that you're building, someone already has built it.
Right.
At this day and age, if it doesn't exist anymore, you got to go find out why it doesn't exist anymore, right? So execution. The number one thing is execution. How was it executed? Was it in the right time that it was executed?
Right.
Was it done by the right people, right? So everything comes down to the execution. Obviously, the team around it and the marketing around it, the budget around it, all that kind of plays a part. But let's go back to days of like execution. Whenever I wanted to kind of mention in the last part, but I think it fits greatly into this part. But when you're trying to start an idea, right, you got to ask yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I building this product? What is it that I'm in it for? If the answer is money, sure, great answer. The answer is I want to look cool, great answer, and all that. But these answers may not be the solution that you're looking for. And what I mean by it is this. If, let's say you're building this product because you think that it will make you rich, then you tend to overlook some details. You will look, you look at things that may actually make or break your product. You will overlook them and you will just, you know, let them go, even though you have to kind of look in deeper. The other thing is that when you look at money, instead of actually looking at the problem, you're probably not well versed in that area of technology or in that area of problem. Let's say I talk about something in construction because I think construction is cool. Mm. I don't really understand construction that much, right? Mm. I have to understand why that problem exists. If that problem persists enough, then I say, well, solving it is worthwhile. And it will have some, you know, monetary kind of compensation at the end of it. So you have to understand the problem deep enough. You have to have a reason why deep enough that you resonate with to be able to pull off a project, right? So again, it becomes execution, executing by the right team at the right time, you know, with the right budget. So when you look at the right team, again, do you have enough information about that market? If you don't, go look for someone. It doesn't mean if you don't have enough information, you can't do it. Just go find some people to have enough information in that. Let's say we built something in the ed tech world, right? How long do you think I've been involved in ed tech? And the answer is a total of zero. But I was a student, right? So I know what the problems students have. I can go ask what the problems that institutions have, or I can do some research, right? Timing. You look at around you, it's like AI is improving. AI is going further and further. Well, this looks like a good time to look at it. If it was a year ago, it would have even been better. You put AI in front of any company name, you will get angel investment right away, right? So right budget, again, it comes with it. AI is expensive. Do you have enough money to, you know, pull yourself off the ground? So when you look at it that way, it's essentially right people, right time, with right budget.
Interesting.
You know, executing in that manner. But right.
Yeah, you have something to add?
Yeah, for sure. I think one point that Cam touched upon is, you know, you can have a great idea, but the biggest thing that you need to do is validate whether the idea you're trying to solve is an actual problem that people face. And that's the biggest thing that people forget, is that you have to talk to the people that you're selling it to or who you're building it for, right? And I'll talk from experience from, you know, building Pensium and then things that we've done in the past, is that even though you have an idea or you think it's doing well, if you're not going in person, if you're not sitting with your users, talking to them, understanding what their problems are, the solution is never going to, it's not going to hit because it's not something that they want, right? And also to say, a lot of ideas that started off at something completely transform when they become businesses. So the first thing I would say is, once you come up with some sort of idea or something that you think you're like, okay, this makes sense, go out to the person who you think would be an ideal customer and just go talk to them, right? That's what we did. I would go personally to universities, speak with students, take interviews with them, ask them, like, why do you have issues studying? Ask them, what are the common problems you face? You know, and once you've gone through, well, I don't know how many we did. We did about 100, right? In like about a week, right? And then it gives you so much data to be like, okay, wait, this is what they're saying. This is what they're feeling, right? Not this way. And then to make those adjustments and to find an actual solution is much easier than, at least that's what I think.
All right. Before we get into Pensium as a business, let's talk about the name. You know, most of the time, names are as a result of, they have a story. And I would like to know, what is the Pensium name story? What's the story behind it? Were you trying to put your names together? Or you, I don't know, one of you should just go for it. Cam, it looks like you are most likely the one going to talk about it.
I came up with a name, just thinking about like different names, something that I don't know if Pensium is memorable enough, but like we had to think about like the SEO and like how well it would rank, or is there another brand that is going to be competing against us, and so on and so forth. Initially, like the first 10 days were a study buddy. The problem with study buddy is that everyone's going to name their thing study buddy. Anything can be a study buddy. A dog can be a study buddy, right? So like it can be anything from a dog to a technology. So like, it will lose meaning. So we were like, so let's come up with a unique name. Pensium, it is amalgamation of pensare, means to think, and the EM at the end is like museum. So in our head was like, it's a place to think, right? Completely made a word. It does not exist anywhere in the world except within the circle of our users and us. So Pensium was meant to be a place to think. And we want to kind of get that across, that within our communities, anywhere that people are, doesn't matter if you're using our platform or not, but our community is a place to think.
Yeah, and the world runs on thinkers, because if you're not thinking, the world is going in a ditch, literally.
For sure. Yeah.
Sam, you want to say something?
Yeah, and you know, that's actually one of the moments when I felt like this was the one for us, because I remember, like Cam said, we've started a lot of ventures. We've started a lot of companies and a lot of things. And every single one of them has been so incredibly difficult to figure out a name for it. Mm. Like, we would think of something and it's already taken, or we can't get the domain name, or we just cannot get the right name for it, right? Mm. And for some reason, this one, Cam came up with the thought, he found this word, and it stuck, and that's it. Mm. And that's kind of why I felt like from the start we were lucky, of course, but it also felt like the right one because things just fell in place for us, for sure.
That's nice.
And we got pensim.com. So.
And we got pensim.
And you got there it. You go. Literally, you finally got it. You got it right there. Yeah. All right. So Pensim as a business, as an idea, you said you've been students before. We all have. Unless, even if you're a self-learned or self-taught person, you had to learn something. And I grew up in Ghana, and the teaching methods are very different. One will say it's a bit more rigorous because, not to put my continent in any bad light, but there's less resources, but there's more demand for you to still be able to meet international standards. So whilst in Canada, in the US, and other countries where you have more computers and other stuff in your lab and all that, you can have one or two, or a lab that does not really have a lot of things, but you have to find a way. I went through a typical science curriculum. So from junior high school, I went to do science and geography, so titration, you know, all that kind of physics. I miss all that, but to be fair, I really don't miss it. But anyways, it's just I love the formula bit and everything, but sometimes the questions can be very tricky. Then I went to uni to read IT. Learning, and then I eventually moved to France to study, and the learning or the teaching styles in different countries have been both a blessing and a curse at the same time, and I've had different experiences, but it's all built me to become who I am. I want to know if you starting such a business stemmed from a personal story or a problem you guys had when you were students. Maybe you didn't like a professor. You don't need to put his name out there. Or maybe there was one particular time where you felt like, you know, school wasn't for you. You wanted to maybe just you just want to give up school and become the next social media creator in the whole world. I don't know, but Samit, tell me what is your personal pensum story?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think I always knew that I wanted to do something in education. As you mentioned, Raymond, you studied in a different country and then you came here. Mm-hmm. It was the same sort of situation for me because I did most of my schooling till 12th grade in India itself. Mm-hmm. So again, education is a little different the way it's taught. Mm-hmm. Like you said, for me and my education background as well, it was very rigorous, right? And the resources weren't the best. I'm sure it's probably changed a little bit now, but again, it was very tough. And again, it did come from that. It's because I will say in high school, like my teachers weren't the best, right? And they didn't know how to, you know, I don't want to be rude to them, but they didn't know how to, some of them didn't know how to get some of the content across to me. So I relied heavily on self-study. Mm-hmm. And the funny enough, I used to go home, study. I used to be way ahead of the class anyways. And then I used to go to class and sleep in class, right? And my teachers used to get super upset. And they used to wake me up and they'd be like, Samit, come solve this question on the board. You haven't been listening, right? So they would wake me up, I would go, and I would solve it because I'd already studied it, right? And that would just make them even more mad. But at that point, I think in 12th grade, it was a little mature of me, I think. I'm being a little... just complimenting myself. Yeah.
But I was yourself on the back, yeah.
Yeah, patting myself on the back. But I was a little mature as to questioning, like, why am I studying this, right? And why am I going to school if I can teach it to myself? Why am I being graded? Things like that sort, right? And I always thought there had to be a better way for someone to learn, right? Mm. Whether it be through a professor, whether it be through technology, whether it be through something of the other. And I always wanted to change that. And I went through to university as well. You know, when you go to university, teachers and profs aren't that hands-on. A lot of it is put onto the university student itself to figure out what to learn and how to manage their time and things such as that. And honestly, my goal was if somebody wanted to learn something, right, there should be no barrier to learning that. Like if I wanted to learn physics, right, even though, you know, there's a professor teaching me and things of that sort, I want to be able to learn it well and understand it well, but I'm dependent on the way that it's taught, right? And that's kind of what we wanted to kind of democratize and kind of where the personal mission came from is that if I wanted to learn something truly, I should be able to learn it, right? There shouldn't be a barrier to that. And that was gnawing at me for the 3 years that we were running, you know, tech service business and things such as that. And I'm happy that I finally took that leap and started working on something related to education and trying to make that change. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's my story. I don't know about Cam.
What is your story, Cam?
I guess I wanted to do a magic trick before this question because I wrote something down. Whenever I have these sort of conversations, like friendly conversations about why Penn Steam came about or just entirely this world, I get this question. It's like, why this? Like, what made you do it? And I always write something to get to in the middle of the conversation. Mm-hmm. That is this. So it's backwards. You can't really read it.
I can see it.
But it says, studying isn't fun. I am yet to find one person to tell me studying is fun. And it is very interesting to me. It's like the most important aspect of human life. Everyone has this mutual agreement that studying is not fun. You can have people that disagree with you that eating is fun. Some people say, yeah, I don't have to eat because I have to eat. Some people enjoy food. Some people don't. Some people are meh about it. But everyone agrees, to my knowledge, that studying isn't fun. And it goes back to the fact that it's for some people, how it's taught is not the most effective way. People would try to do anything but to study. They would go and ask for, I don't know, some sort of voodoo curse to you know, for their profs not to show up to the exam.
Exactly. But
they wouldn't study. So we were like, well, why can't we just make it fun? Why shouldn't it be fun? Why shouldn't it be something that someone can look forward to rather than just like dreads every second? So I never liked school. I never liked going to school. I never like being told what to do. When I graduated university, I think my parents had the biggest sigh of relief. And that was the biggest achievement of their life, that their son graduated university and not dropped. Because I told them, first year of university, if I start a business and it's successful, I will drop out.
I was pretty close.
There you go. And I mean, immigrant parents, oh my God, tell them that I dropped out.
Yeah,
that would have been a difficult conversation. But I didn't drop out. And since it's like, why can't studying be fun? I never knew the solution because I never wanted to kind of look at it because I wanted to be done with that world. But then came about this entire AI journey, then came about our personal experience, and we were like, well, let's do something about it.
Hello there, Tech Surfers. I have got some news for you. The Tech Surf podcast is now on Instagram and LinkedIn. Follow us on Instagram at the Tech Surf podcast and LinkedIn, the Tech Surf podcast, to stay up to date on new episodes and to get interactive. Don't forget to like, share, and send us feedback on your favorite episodes and the lessons you've learned. See you soon.
Instead of just saying that it's not fun.
Impressive. Now, this is going to be two questions in one. First off, AI is the new order of the day. Like you said, if you slap AI on your business at the moment, you have investors coming in because they see it to be the new magic. But then traditional learning is still being appreciated. People still want to go to schools, go to universities, go through the same thing. And even if they try to maybe stay away from the typical classroom, the biggest university in the whole world, YouTube, is there. And then there's Pentium coming with a fun way to learn powered by AI. What is that magic that is setting you apart from the traditional way, and why do you feel that is going, that that market, or that, that there's that opportunity for Pentium to bring people in and change the game, for the lack of a better word?
That is a great question. Let's look at it from the lens of a student. Well, a student wants to go to a reputable school or to a school in general to get a degree, maybe, right? Or maybe they believe that going to school is going to benefit them more than if they study themselves. Maybe it is a procrastination that kind of keeps them away from actually studying, and they want to go to school so that they're held responsible and accountable for this. Whatever the situation is, we don't see Pentium as a is the complete answer. We look at it as a supplementary tool. It's an AI-assisted supplementary tool to a student, though we could be the one and only answer. And the reason is this. We are not here. People say, yes, this brand is here to revolutionize so-and-so, is here to do so-and-so. We have to be realistic about where we stand in the world. We can change the educational and culture, environment. We are hoping to make a dent, meaning we're hoping to help anyone that wants to learn, learn. If Cam Husseini here, Raymond, Summit, we all kind of learn a little differently, meaning I study at night, you study in the morning, Summit studies in the afternoon. We have to have enough access to quality education, quality resources for all of us to understand, at least to a certain degree. If I study better, if I sit down and spend 3 hours cramming, then I should be able to, and Raymond should be able to space its his kind of studies, and Summit, you know, according to his. But unfortunately, the cookie cutter approach in our education system all around the world does not equate to that. And you have, why do tutoring programs work? Because whoever has money has the ability to have a teacher with themselves at all time to go through material one by one wherever they have problems. Average student does not have access to that. Especially, I'm from a Persian background. My country is a developing country. You're looking at rural areas that they don't have enough resources, right? They don't have resources for their educators to be more educated, I guess. They don't have enough resources for the students. They don't have resources in general. So what needs to be done there, right? You have this educational gap that gets bigger and bigger because of the lack of resources and I guess, you know, the equal access. And you have the politicians doing their own thing. But we were like, how can we create a supplementary platform that can sit on top of the current educational system rather than aiming at changing it? Because, again, go tell all these profs, instructors, universities that we are there for their jobs. And watch you get banned today. We're not for that. We are here to help people and help everyone. Instructors, institutions, essentially students, parents. I tell you one small story and then Summit can take over. So when we first launched, we had a student reach out to us from Malaysia. She was a student for neurodiverse students, so essentially challenged students. And she was sending us her government-issued ID and student ID, teacher ID to have access to our platform because our platform was free to use. That just shows that this mission is not for so-and-so student, higher education, lower K-12. This is for anyone who wants to learn, anyone who wants to teach, anyone who has any aspiration to do better. And that is why Pentium came about. And that is why we think we are capable of getting this message across. Because we have to be realistic about our goal. But at the same time, we have to understand what reach we have.
Mm. Impressive. Sam, have any words to add?
I do have a few, but I think Cam encompassed that pretty well. And like we said, our goal is to improve understanding and learning for anyone and everyone, right? We're not here to make a massive change and have like the whole educational system change. No, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to supplement, like Cam said, you know, make sure it's being used in classrooms to help people learn. Maybe it's used by educators to take load off of them planning their classes and things such as that, right? Who knows what Pentium will become, but again, at the end of the day, our goal is to enhance learning in whatever form. And I'll also talk about a little bit of a personal story that kind of really hits home, is that, you know, a lot of students get stressed. A lot of students, you know, get very worried when it comes to midterms and things like that. And, you know, when we launched, the overwhelming support that we got from our users and, you know, the messages that we would get, it'd be like, oh my gosh, this is a lifesaver and things such as that. Of course, you know, it's just great because at the end of the day, when we're building things, of course, you know, you have to think about, you know, money coming in. You have to think about how you're going to support yourself. But you also got to think about the goal. But when we firsthand see students message us, when we firsthand see people tell us, hey, listen, you guys have done something amazing here, or they'd be like, this is a lifesaver, or this has helped us a little bit in understanding, you know, that's something that keeps driving us forward, or at least me, because I think that sense of that feeling that you get when you've improved someone's life, even by 1%, is amazing for me.
Amazing. Amazing. And I like the fact that your platform does, is not just you talking, but you have testimonials backing them and you have people who are appreciating it. Now, walk us through how it is like to be part of Pentium. Is it a free YouTube-like site? Because you said it was free at a point. So when you use the past tense, I was like, oh, okay. Maybe my people back in Ghana who like free stuff may not really want to hear this, but who knows? Because at the end of the day, I'm creating the pod for everyone. But what does it look like? How does one get on board? Is there, you know, a little bit of a plan? Is there also opportunities for some form of scholarships, aid, whatever it is? And is it, and you've mentioned countries that are outside Canada, Malaysia. I think those are the two I heard so far. I'm like the only country I heard so far, I believe. Yeah, walk us through. It's open to everyone from every part of the world. And how do students get on board? How do professors get on board? How do institutions get on board? Yeah.
So the platform is free. It will always be a part of it that is free, so people can use it. That is a promise that we will keep. And that is something, obviously, like this podcast, it will be out there forever, and this you can mark my word that it's always have a free version people can use. In terms of languages, we had added 14 languages to our platform, but so essentially we looked at our demographic of where people are and tried to kind of make decisions based on that. We have English, Dutch, French, Arabic, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, Mandarin, Hindi, Farsi, I'm Persian, I had to be a little biased here. we tried to kind of, we're adding Turkish very soon. We tried to kind of look at our users and see who's looking for what and add those. We had a lot of people from Brazil when we first launched. We had a lot of people from India. We had a lot of people from essentially Southeast Asia. We had a lot of people from Nigeria that were using our platform. A lot of people from UK, obviously, Germany, Netherlands, different places. I can tell you pretty much a lot of countries with a lot of users. What we are going to do in near future, obviously, we have our Discord channel where people are putting down their suggestions into what do you like to see in terms of what features they'd like to see. And we take those things very seriously. We develop for our community. We do things for our community. We listen to our community. And obviously, the company has to stay afloat from sometimes in the future. But again, back to my point, it will always be a free version there. We will try to add things to make it worth people's while when they buy a premium membership, but there will always be a free, again, essentially program. How does it work? How would it be? How could people join? Right now, if they join our Discord channel, they get a free account, or else they have to go to a wait list, and kind of we send emails out to our wait list once in a while. Mm-hmm. But if they join our Discord, they can join for free, and then they get referral code that they can refer their friends after that. And very soon, we're hoping to make this a bigger impact, have people work with each other, you know, help each other out, make this a more of a all-encompassing platform where people don't have to go around, you know, if they're trying to plan their studies, if they're trying to put all their studying documents into one place, make notes and all that. We're trying to create one-stop shop for students. Soon that will come as well.
Impressive. As an AI startup in today's AI wave where everything is just AI, you breathe as AI. Probably my friend, one of the episodes, I think my first episode, my friend was like, he's looking forward to having AI noses so that we could smell. So I could, now I could smell what is happening in your house. And I'm not too sure. I wouldn't want anyone smelling what's happening, whether it's cooking or maybe just a pungent smell that just comes once in a while. But I'm just curious about what it is like running an AI startup today. You did say you started somewhere in July, so it's this year. So it's not even a year old yet, just a few months. How has the journey been? What has been the major challenge so far? Sam, maybe you want to talk about yours and then Cam.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're working in the AI space, look at OpenAI, you look at all these companies. I think the biggest challenge or just working in the space is that you got to be quick. You got to be fast because there's always new things coming out. There's always new tools, always new features coming out, right? And I think the biggest challenge right now is making sure, especially when you're starting a company, is making sure that you're not a tool, but a product, right? Because what happens is when you're a tool, who's to say like a bigger company such as OpenAI or something will push something new out and then it eats into what your business was, right? And I think with their new update, they did take over a couple of startups, and they did, their new features definitely did eat into that. But just generally, you know, if you're an AI startup or just a startup in general, I think the challenge is always speed, right? It's because if you're not looking at it on a weekly basis, how much you're growing and what's been happening, it can be tough, right? If your growth is slow, then I wouldn't call yourself a startup. So the biggest challenge is just maintaining your growth and constantly improving week by week. That's been the biggest challenge. And I think, for me, it's honestly going through all the analytics, making sure, testing new ways every day to see what works and what doesn't work. Because again, I think that's the biggest thing when you start your own company is you don't have all the answers, right? But you figure it out. And how do you figure it out? By launching new things, trying new things, seeing what fails and what doesn't, right? At the end of the day. So yeah, that's been my experience. I'm pretty sure Cam has some different challenges because I think me and Cam, we work in tandem, but we have like our own skill sets, right? So there are different things that he hits at for sure.
Yeah, I guess for me, just the support system. The support is not there. Technology is so new that the problems that you're having, there may be 300 people in the world or 400 people in the world that are having the same problem. People have thought about it. They haven't tried it yet, right? You have things that come out like a week prior, right? Or 2 months prior that the technology is out. No one has tried it and everyone has thought about it. You try it and it doesn't work. You ask the question on Reddit, on somewhere, and people just, no one responds. And you get kind of panicked and you're like, so what do I do? What do I do? And you have to come up with a solution yourself. Obviously, like being a startup, you want to develop something that scales and is production ready. But unfortunately, it's just not doable because obviously you don't have all the skill sets, right? Again, as I said, I'm not a good developer. I know how to patch things together. I'm not a good developer. So when we first started in July, and for the past couple of years that I've been in just thinking about generative AIs and just like machine learning algorithm and so on and so forth, machine learning algorithm has been around since 1900, right? That's essentially last century. So the idea behind it, everything has been around very much more detail. Generative AI has been a thing since 2017. Obviously, the ideas behind it has been around for much longer. But when you look at the technology that's been around the generative AI, it's not that much. So you're just like, I'm probably part of the first few hundred people that have thought about this and actually doing something. So I have to figure it out myself. And someone does it, puts it on YouTube. Now everyone knows it, right? But you are among the first few people that know, that tries to figure it out, because the support system is not there. You just have to kind of stumble and then try to make it work. And that has been a real struggle within this entire generative AI and this AI world in general.
I can only imagine how it is. I did a bit of, during my master's, I worked in an AI startup. They were doing something in health tech. It had to do with working with, there were so many use cases, and that was my first time working in a startup, and it was so fast. Like, it was so fast at the point I was like, when do we just catch a break? But I just realized that it doesn't happen in a startup. And even though I didn't continue with them in my second internship, I have seen the project grow. Maybe what I built as an intern or during my internship was valuable or not. But it was nice to see that the ideas they had were coming to fruition. Let's get away from typical entrepreneurial kind of stuff. I believe you guys are human, and you did mention that you've been to Iceland and done other kind of stuff. As busy entrepreneurs, how do you unplug? How do you go about this time I'm taking a breather? Do you often take some time off just to, reconnect with nature, life, family, friends, the kind of stuff? Cam?
I travel a lot. I say that, and it's kind of terrible, I guess. I have seen airports more than I've seen my father in the past year. So it is a terrible, and one of the reasons that I had to kind of move from Canada to the UK is to be able to travel much easier, because if I wanted to go to like European countries from Canada, it is an 8-10 hour flight, and my body just can't take that that beating anymore. So I try to travel a lot, and I read. I enjoy reading. I guess reading like traveling and music has been a big part of my life. And I see that as a very much so prominent part of my life.
What are you reading currently?
So right now I have two books. One is Free Will by Sam Harris. The other one is The Black Swan by Nicholas Taleb.
Nice.
And yeah, pretty good books. Nice. I recommend.
All right, Sam.
Yeah, can't put it in a nice way. I look at it a little differently. Of course, I do the others as well. I read. I go for walks just to wind down. I think going to the gym or just doing some physical activity always helps, because, when you're doing your business, that's something you think of 24/7. And then I think when you're doing something like a physical activity, at least you stop thinking about it and have time to unwind. But how I look at it is everything is a cycle, right? I think just like, you know, how you have a bodybuilder that's preparing for, let's say, a show, they're obviously going to work super hard, like 2 months before their show or a month before their show, right? And then after that, then they can let loose a little bit, maybe have a little bit of junk food and things like that. So I look at, you know, entrepreneurship quite similarly as well. You know, every business has its cycles. So why not work with that cycle too, right? So understand that at some point you have to put in a lot of work because you have a deadline for yourself or something that you want to build in 3 months, right? But then after that, you don't have to necessarily work as hard. Maybe you can lean back a bit, take a little bit of a break, but then again, get back into that cycle eventually, right? So just understand what those cycles are for your business and for yourself so that you don't burn out, because that's a massive thing that, well, I've experienced for sure.
I like that. We are about to conclude. I wish podcasts allowed us to do 8 hours without losing people's attention, but attention spans are a whole topic altogether, and we have to respect people's attention spans. But for me, it was nice. So for those of you listening, Samit reached out and I read the message. I was like, oh, wow, that was nice to know that someone in this space would love to be on the pod. And to even know that your fellow podcasters are like, okay, because I started this thing. I don't know if I could show you my room area, just my little studio, my microphone and everything at the corner here. But here we are. We have 14 episodes. You guys are going to be most likely the 16th and everything. And to know that this international collaboration and our friendship that we're going to develop from this time moving forward is... It's just refreshing to know that you started this business in July. Regardless of the challenges you guys have had, you are still, you know, pushing forward, and you have, you know, good testimonials for your product. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have known Pentium. I'm curious to make sure that you start having a Ghanaian chapter, you know, because why not, you know? But yeah, I want you guys to give your final words, you know, about entrepreneurship, about the AI space, and about Pentium. Each of you, in the shortest amount of time, just give your final words. Yeah.
Sama, do you want to go first?
Sure. Why not? So again, Raymond, thanks for having us on. We're grateful that we could have this chat. And honestly, final words. Well, what I would like to conclude with is honestly just figure out what you really want to do, right? And figure out, I feel like one thing that people make the mistake of not doing is honestly just taking the time to figure out how risky something is and how whether they can take that leap or fail or not. I think coming back to our first few minutes of the pod, what I would like to leave with is actually sit down. Think how risky it is for you to actually take that leap of faith and start something that you want to do. And most of the time when you do that, it's not as big as you make it seem in your head. So that's my little message.
Impressive. Cam?
I guess for me, I really care about learning, about reading, about becoming better. I say this thing that Confucius said, education breeds confidence. Confidence breeds hope. Hope breeds peace. And I equate Pentium as our collective effort to make our community a little more peaceful than the world is through education, through learning. Whether you're reading a book, whether you're doing anything. We go through the 12 years of schooling, you know, by force. The kind of parents force us. We have to grow. We have to learn. And then we go to university. You don't have to do all of that, but we'll still do it. But then after university, we don't have to do anything. We don't have to do education. We don't have to learn anything. But I wish for everyone to learn. I wish for everyone to have the time to read more. You know, it just makes you peaceful person, and I wish we can get that message across.
Both of you have golden hearts, and you are Great personalities. I was looking forward to it. I was looking forward to this episode, knowing that it's going to be our first time meeting each other. I had a short call with Samit, but he did speak highly of you and actually said a lot of the things. You guys are very similar, and it's like twins, but who are very much different. But I just want to say thank you so much for first reaching out and joining the pod. I really, really don't take it lightly, because like I said, I started this right from my house and it's going quicker than I thought. So it makes me feel like I'm doing something right. At the same time too, I'm also thankful that you guys have chosen an area which is very important to our existence as humans, which is our brain, our thoughts, our thinking, and the fact that Pentium has to do with making people think. If we're not thinking, we're not making the world a better place. So the fact that you found education to be a very important area, I'm excited about what Pentium is going to do. I'm hoping that it can be part of, you know, the teaching aid for countries like mine that may not necessarily have a lot of resources, but then you guys can come in as that, you know, good outsourcing body to bridge the gap on a lot of things, and potentially, you know, have Pentium in our local dialects. You never know, because AI, generative AI, is doing it, translating into my local dialect. So maybe it's a little bit of an opening for you guys to look into translating into Chi, Ga, Ewe, Swahili, and other African languages. But thank you so much for this time. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us.
Learning can be challenging, and students may not always be excited about it. However, with AI holding a tremendous promise for enhancing edtech and reinventing learning, Pentium believes that they can make learning more engaging and exciting. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the TechSec Podcast. See you in the next episode.